The room was old-fashioned, with heavy wooden drawers and shelves for holding jams and pickles back when the house was built. Now it stored cookies, cases of wine, potato chips, root vegetables, seltzer. We left the light off, in case someone came into the kitchen, but we were sure Grandad was the only one sleeping at Claremont. He was never going to hear anything in the night. He wore a hearing aid by day. We were rummaging when we heard voices. It was the aunts coming into the kitchen, their speech slurred and hysterical.
"This is why people kill each other," said Bess bitterly. "I should walk out of this room before I do something I regret."
"You don't mean that," said Carrie.
"Don't tell me what I mean," shouted Bess. "You have Ed. You don't need money like I do."
"You've already dug your claws into the Boston house," said Mummy. "Leave the island alone."
"Who did the funeral arrangements for Mother?" snapped Bess. "Who stayed by Dad's side for weeks? Who went through the papers, talked to the mourners, wrote the thank you notes?"
"You live near him," said Mummy. "You were right there."
"I was running a household with four kids and holding down a job," said Bess. "You were doing neither."
"A part-time job," said Mummy. "And if I hear you say four kids again, I'll scream." "I was running a household, too," said Carrie.
"Either of you could have come for a week, or two." "You left it all to me," said Bess. "I'm the one who has to deal with Dad all year. I'm the one who runs over when he wants help. I'm the one who deals with his dementia and his grief."
"Don't say that," said Carrie. "You don't know how often he calls me. You don't know how much I have to swallow just to be a good daughter to him."
"So damn straight I want that house," continued Bess, as if she hadn't heard. "I've earned it. Who drove Mother to her doctor's appointments? Who sat by her bedside?"
"That's not fair," said Mummy. "You know I came down. Carrie came down, too."
"To visit," hissed Bess.
"You didn't have to do that stuff," said Mummy.
"Nobody asked you to. Nobody else was there to do it. You let me do it, and never thanked me. I'm crammed into Cuddle Down, and it has the worst kitchen. You never even go in there. You'd be surprised how run down it is. It's worth almost nothing. Mother fixed up the Windermere kitchen before she died and the bathrooms at Redgate, but Cuddle Down is just as it ever was. And here you two are, begrudging me compensation for everything I've done and continue to do."
"You agreed to the drawings for Cuddle Down," snapped Carrie. "You wanted the view. You have the only beachfront house, Bess, and you have all Dad's approval and devotion. I think that would be enough for you. Lord knows it's impossible for the rest of us to get."
"You choose not to have it," said Bess. "You choose, Ed. You choose to live with him. You choose to bring Gat here every summer when you know he's not one of us. You know the way Dad thinks. And you not only keep running around with Ed, you bring his nephew here and parade him around like a defiant little girl with a forbidden toy. Your eyes have been wide open all the time."
"Shut up about Ed," cried Carrie. "Just shut up. Shut up." There was a slap. Carrie hit Bess across the mouth. Bess left, slamming doors. Mummy left too. Gat and I sat on the floor of the pantry, holding hands, trying not to breathe, trying not to move, while Carrie put the glasses in the dishwasher. Chapter 67. A couple days later, Grandad called Johnny into his Claremont study. Asked Johnny to do him a favor. Johnny said no. Grandad said he would empty Johnny's college fund if Johnny didn't do it. Johnny said he wasn't interfering in his mother's love life, and he would bloody well work his way through community college then. Grandad called Thatcher. Johnny told Carrie. Carrie asked Gat to stop coming to supper at Claremont. "It's riling Harris up," she said. "It would be better for all of us if you just made some macaroni at Redgate, or I can have Johnny bring you a plate. You understand, don't you? Just until everything gets sorted out." Gat did not understand. Johnny didn't either. All of us liars stopped coming to meals. Soon after, Bess told Mirren to push Grandad harder about Windermere. She was to take Bonnie, Liberty, and Taft with her to talk with him in his study. They were the future of this family, Mirren was to say. Johnny and Katie didn't have the math grades for Harvard, while Mirren did. Mirren was the business-minded one, the heir to all Grandad stood for. Johnny and Katie were too frivolous. And look at these beautiful littles. The pretty blonde twins, the freckle-faced Taft. They were Sinclairs through and through. "Say all that," said Bess. But Mirren would not. Bess took her phone, her laptop, and her allowance. Mirren would not. One evening, Mummy asked about me and Gat. "Grandad knows something is going on with you two. He isn't happy." I told her I was in love. She said, "Don't be silly." "You're risking the future," she said. "Our house. Your education."
"For what?"
"Love. A summer fling. Leave the boy alone."
"No.
Love doesn't last, Katie. You know that."
"I don't."
"Well, believe me, it doesn't."
"We're not you and Dad," I said. "We're not."
Mummy crossed her arms. "Grow up, Cadence. See the world as it is, not as you wish it would be."
I looked at her. My lovely, tall mother, with her pretty coil of hair and her hard, bitter mouth. Her veins were never open. Her heart never leapt out to flop helplessly on the lawn. She never melted into puddles. She was normal. Always. At any cost.
"For the health of our family," she said eventually, "you are to break it off."
"I won't."
"You must. And when you're done, make sure Grandad knows. Tell him it's nothing, and tell him it never was anything. Tell him he shouldn't worry about that boy again, and then talk to him about Harvard and tennis team and the future you have in front of you. Do you understand me?"
I did not, and I would not. I ran out of the house and into Gat's arms. I bled on him, and he didn't mind. Late that night, Mirren, Gat, Johnny, and I went down to the tool shed behind Claremont. We found hammers. There were only two, so Gat carried a wrench, and I carried a pair of heavy garden shears. We collected the ivory goose from Claremont, the elephants from Windermere, the monkeys from Redgate, and the toad from Cuddledown. We brought them down to the dock in the dark and smashed them with the hammers and the wrench and the shears until the ivory was nothing but powder. Gat ducked a bucket into the cold seawater and rinsed the dock clean. Chapter 68. We thought. We talked. "What if," we said. "What if? In another universe, a split reality, God reached out his finger and lightning struck the Claremont house. What if?" God sent it up in flames. Thus, he would punish the greedy, the petty, the prejudiced, the normal, the unkind. They would repent of their deeds. And after that, learn to love one another again. Open their souls, open their veins, wipe off their smiles. Be a family. Stay a family. It wasn't religious the way we thought of it. And yet, it was. Punishment. Purification through flames. Or both. Chapter 69. Next day, late July of summer 15, there was a lunch at Claremont. Another lunch, like all the other lunches, set out on the big table. More tears. The voices were so loud that we liars came up the walkway from Redgate and stood at the foot of the garden listening.
"I have to earn your love every day, Dad," Mummy slurred. "And most days I fail. It's not fucking fair. Carrie gets the pearls. Bess gets the Boston house. Bess gets Windermere. Carrie has Johnny, and you'll give him Claremont. I know you will. I'll be left alone with nothing. Nothing. Even though Katie's supposed to be the one. The first, you always said."
Granddad stood from his seat at the head of the table.
"Penelope! I'll take her away. Do you hear me? I'll take Katie away, and you won't see her again."
Granddad's voice boomed across the yard.
"This is the United States of America," he said. "You don't seem to understand that, Penny, so let me explain. In America, here is how we operate. We work for what we want, and we get ahead. We never take no for answer, and we deserve the rewards of our perseverance. Will, Taft, are you listening?"
The little boys nodded, chins quivering. Granddad continued.
"We Sinclairs are a grand old family. That is something to be proud of. Our traditions and values form the bedrock on which future generations stand. This island is our home, as it was my father's and my grandfather's before him. And yet, the three of you women, with these divorces, broken homes, this disrespect for tradition, this lack of a work ethic, you have done nothing but disappoint an old man who thought he raised you right."
"Dad, please," said Bess.
"Be quiet," thundered Granddad. "You cannot expect me to accept your disregard for the values of this family and reward you and your children with financial security. You cannot, any of you, expect this. And yet, day after day, I see that you do. I will no longer tolerate it."
Bess crumpled in tears. Carrie grabbed Will by the elbow and walked toward the dock. Mummy threw her wine glass against the side of Claremont House. Chapter 70. "What happened then?" I asked Johnny. We are still lying on the floor of Cuddledown, early in the morning, summer 17.
"You don't remember?"
he says.
"No. People started leaving the island. Carrie took Will to a hotel in Edgartown and asked me and Gat to follow her as soon as we'd packed everything. The staff departed at 8. Your mother went to see that friend of hers on the vineyard."
"Alice?"
"Yes, Alice came and got her, but you wouldn't leave, and finally she had to go without you. Granddad took off for the mainland, and then we decided about the fire."
"We planned it out," I say.
We did. We convinced Bess to take the big boat and all the littles to see a movie on the vineyard. As Johnny talks, the memories form. I fill in details he hasn't spoken aloud.
When they left, we drank the wine they'd left corked in the fridge, says Johnny. 4 open bottles. Cat was so angry.
He was right, I say. Johnny turns his face and speaks into the floor again.
Because he wasn't coming back. If my mom married Ed, they'd be cut off. And if my mom left Ed, Gat wouldn't be connected to our family anymore.
Claremont was like the symbol of everything that was wrong. It is Mirren's voice. She came in so quietly I didn't hear. She is now lying on the floor next to Johnny, holding his other hand.
The seat of the patriarchy, says Gat.
I didn't hear him come in either. He lies down next to me.
You're such an ass, Gat, says Johnny kindly. You always say patriarchy. It's what I mean. You sneak it in wherever you can. Patriarchy on toast, patriarchy in my pants, patriarchy with a squeeze of lemon. Claremont seemed like the seat of the patriarchy, repeats Gat. And yes, we were stupid drunk. And yes, we thought they'd rip the family apart and I would never come here again. We figured if the house was gone, and the paperwork, and data inside it gone, and all the objects they fought about gone, the power would be gone.
We could be a family, says Mirren.
It was like a purification, says Gat. She remembers we set a fire is all, says Johnny, his voice suddenly loud.
And some other things, I add, sitting up and looking at the liars in the morning light. Things are coming back as you're filling me in.
We are telling you all the stuff that happened before we set the fire, says Johnny, still loud.
Yes, says Mirren.
We set a fire, I say in wonder. We didn't sob and bleed. We did something instead. Made a change.
Kind of, says Mirren.
Are you kidding? We burned that fucking palace to the ground.
Chapter 71. After the aunties and granddad quarreled, I was crying. Gat was crying, too. He was going to leave the island, and I'd never see him again. He would never see me. Gat. My Gat. I had never cried with anyone before, at the same time. He cried like a man, not like a boy. Not like he was frustrated or hadn't gotten his way, but like life was bitter, like his wounds couldn't be healed. I wanted to heal them for him. We ran down to the tiny beach alone. I clung to him and we sat together in the sand, and for once, he had nothing to say. No analysis, no questions. Finally, I said something about, what if we took it into our own hands. And Gat said, how? And I said something about, what if they could stop fighting? We have something to save. And Gat said, yes, you and me and Mirren and Johnny, yes, we do. But of course we can always see each other, the four of us. Next year we can drive. There is always the phone. But here, I said, this. Yes, here, he said, this. You and me. I said something about, what if we could somehow stop being the beautiful Sinclair family and just be a family? What if we could stop being different colors, different backgrounds, and just be in love? What if we could force everyone to change? Force them. You want to play God, Gat said. I want to take action, I said.